I'd like to discuss two what I believe are related concepts. And I think they're very critical, I would say, to a parent who wishes to see the best in his children, and a teacher or a Rebbe who wishes to see the best in his Talmidim. And one is a mindset, and the other one is a skill. But I think both of them are critical. The mindset, I think, has two ingredients to it: vision and patience. Vision means that I look at a person and I see a future. I don't want to use the word potential, because anytime you talk to a person about their potential, what the interpreter is saying, oh, I have potential. Yeah, it means I'm really trash right now, but I have potential for the future. It's the wrong word. But I see their capabilities. I see where they're going. I see the trajectory on which they are right now. But it's way down the line. The second thing I need is patience to see through the unfolding of that vision, because a vision speaks about the future, and patience speaks about, until we get there, I could lose my mind. So I have to have patience. I have to be confident in my vision. I have to be confident in the capabilities and the commitments and the dedication and you know, of this individual. And I have to keep that vision in mind. I have to keep that vision in mind when I see things that are counter to that vision. What looks like on the surface seems antithetical, anything but that vision. So the way I have to look at that is I say, yes, my vision is still in place. I believe that this is the appropriate vision. And what I'm seeing now is just part of the process of getting there. And I have to activate my patience in order to be able to wait it out and not to panic and not to get upset and not to be miyayish, not to just give up and throw in the towel and forget about it. And that's what I need, this patience, savlanut. Okay. But there's something, in order to maintain the patience and maintain the vision, there's another midah that I need. And it's a midah that Chazal described in very simple terms. But it's a midah that is critical in dealing with people, parents with children, talmidim, all across the board. And that is, al todin es chavercho ad shetagia limkoimoy. Don't dare, I added a little word for emphasis, don't dare judge your friend until, I would say, you walk in his shoes. You know, ad shetagia limkoimoy, you reach his place, because everybody has an internal perspective. We see the externals, we see the outside, but everybody has what's going on inside. And the obvious or the overt, what you see outside, very often has no shaychus, no relationship to what's going on inside. And unless you can get inside, you really have no idea who you're dealing with, what you're dealing with, whether what you see is going against your dreams or should be trying your patience, or whether really it's just real development that's taking place, or real challenges that you had no idea of going on and you have to, and the person has to overcome before he can start this development. But unless a person can allow himself to look into the other person and to see it, to stand in his place and to walk in his shoes, then you can miss the whole point, and you're going to be impatient and you for no reason, or you could be patient and not realize that there's a kink there, there's something going wrong there, and that has to be corrected. So it's extremely important to get inside to see what's going on inside the person. And our lives and our society and our experiences are so against this thought. We judge quickly. We judge by what we see. We look at the outside. We consider ourselves very smart and pikhim, very, very perceptive. And I see it and I size it up. But there's so many variables. There's so many things that may be going on. You don't know what's going on in a person's life. You don't know what's going on in a person's home. You don't know what's going on in a person's head. You don't know what's going on in a person's stomach. You don't know what's going on in his toes. You don't know anything. You know, and Mimela, until we get there, we don't even know who we're talking to. So I think these things have to be kept constantly in mind. We need vision. Don't look at the present, because the present will be very, very disillusioning. You get very confused. Look, see a future, and be patient in the process of getting there. But in order to get there, we have to know as well as humanly possible what's going on inside, so we deal with it appropriately, so we don't judge it or misjudge it, you know, judge it inappropriately or misjudge it, and we can really help a person to develop, to become, you know, what they should become.
How do you find out what's going on inside?
Well, so very good. So the first way that people find out what's going on inside is what they call talking. But, you know, that's the wrong word. I use the inappropriate word. Yeah. The word I should have used is conversation. Because if you talk at the person, you're not going to know anything. And sometimes if you let the person talk and you don't question, you also don't know anything, because they're presenting something, maybe they're presenting an agenda, maybe they're not, maybe you understand what they're saying, maybe you don't. But interactive conversation, where the person talks, and that's the only way to get to know a person. Now, but in the skill of conversation, there's something that's also, and I've mentioned this here, I'm sure, but it's something that's worthy of repeating, even for those that heard it. And there used to be a Professor Halperin in Yerushalayim. He was like the giant in mental health. I think it was a psychiatrist and a neurologist together. That's what I remember, something like that. It was 50 years ago, we're talking more than 50 years ago. I remember somebody once had a nervous breakdown, and I brought this person to, it was one of the guys in the yeshiva, I brought this person to him. And he was the authority. So they once interviewed him, and they said, what do you do if you can't help a person? So he says, I send them to Rav Aryeh Levine. Very interesting. Like, what? He says, I don't know, but Rav Aryeh knows how to help people even that I can't help. So they went to Rav Aryeh, and they asked him, what do you do? And Rav Aryeh said the simplest thing. He says, all I do is listen, but mitabisala mitgefil, empathetic listening. I listen. Now, sympathy means I feel sorry for you. Nobody wants to be felt sorry for. Because when you feel sorry for me, you put me down. And if you put me down, I don't want to have anything to do with you. I need people who are going to build me up, who are going to validate me, who are going to make me feel good about myself, who are going to make me happy. So don't have sympathy. Oy, Nebuch, 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 Nebuch. I don't want to be a Nebuch. Empathy means I validate your pain. I feel your pain. Your pain is real. We connect because you express your pain, and I internalize that pain, and I'm pained for your pain, and in the process, a few things happen. Number one, you're validating me. With all my pain, you're making me feel good, because my pain is legitimate. People need to be validated. Number two, because you feel my pain, I can feel that you understand what I'm going through. If you understand what I'm going through, it makes it so much easier to communicate. Because part of communication is a willingness to share with someone who will understand. Because if you share with the experience of sharing with someone who you feel doesn't understand is enormously frustrating. I'm bearing my soul, and I'm talking to you, And I don't think you know what I'm talking about. It's too painful. But when somebody sees that you get it, you understand it, you feel their pain, you validate the pain, it creates a whole different conversation, and that's the way you start to really get to know the person. Yes, I'm sorry.
How can you say you understand someone's pain or whatever he's going through if you've never gone through it yourself?
Well, that's something else. Now, here's that's a very interesting point.
Well, Islam, two people can never go through the same experience.
What?
They'll never have it.
Okay, well, no, but there are similar experiences. So there's no question about it that the best person to talk to a person who is in pain, especially to provide this empathetic ear, is a person who has been through similar situations. Because then what happens is they have this sense of, you know what I'm talking about. You've been there, done that. You know, you've experienced this, so I can talk to you because you get it. So that's true. Second, if we can't get that, then sometimes even if you haven't gone through my circumstance, but you've been through similar circumstances, you've suffered pain in your life, you know what it means to be challenged, and therefore, even though it's a different challenge, it's a different pain, it's a different problem, but I could also feel a little bit, you know, okay, you get it. Sometimes when we don't have any of that, so we have to do the best we can. And the way that you do it, and this is a technique that the psychologists use, which, they use it, they're taught it, so I imagine that it's somewhat effective. It's not as good as if you really know. It's that you paraphrase and repeat back what the person said. Oh, you feel that unless a person has experienced it, they can't possibly know what you've been through. Is that correct? That's the way you feel? Yes, okay. So now you see that I understand you. And now that I understand you, I can better communicate with you because you have a little more confidence in me. And that's what they do. You say, oh, you mean you're feeling that, oh, I got it. You know what I mean? I don't want to say anything. Anyway, but it does help. Listen, we can't always have the best. Unfortunately, you know, I do tell people that have had Yisurim in life that you have no idea that despite all the pain and suffering that you may have been through, the Yisurim that you have gone through can be an opportunity to help so many people. You become so much more credible because you've been there, you've felt it, you know what it is. It's something that I can appreciate, I can imagine that you understand me because you've been through difficulty. So, difficult, we know, lo miyuktsech v'lo miduvshech, we're not looking for difficulties in life. We want, I don't know why not miduvshech, but anyway, but we definitely have to realize that when we have had experiences, then we're in a unique position to help people more. I want to mention something which, just because there's some new people in the audience, and I invite anyone who wishes to come in and look at it. In my office, there hangs a picture. It's a copy of the original picture, which hangs in my house someplace way up where nobody could see it. And I spoke at one of our dinners once that the Klal Yisrael is compared to the olive. The olive has the most precious oil. Olive oil is the best of the oils, but it's the hardest to get out. An olive has to be pressed and banged and stomped and stepped on in a chais, however, the hardest thing, the oil, orange juice, the juice comes out of the orange, out of the lemon, so much easier. Olive is the hardest. So to Klal Yisrael, the Medrash says, are compared to the olive, that they have the most precious godless inside, but sometimes they have to go through all kinds of difficulties, challenges, yisurim, suffering, pain, who knows what, in order to access, to bring forth that godless. So I pointed out that if Chazal compare the two, they must be comparable. That's a fair statement. That means that just like the oil is inside, there's no chemical process that creates the oil when you squeeze it. You're just squeezing out what's there. There's liquid inside. So the same thing with the klalis. The godless is there. You just have to get it out. So Ephraim Kamen, who has a talent as an artist, so he drew this portrait. And what it looks like is a guy holding an olive, squeezing out the oil, with a talus over his eyes, and all you see is a smile, which looks like mine, and a black beard, which doesn't look like mine. Anyway, so that's what you see. And the idea was symbolically trying to squeeze the good out of the olive, to bring forth the good out of people. So somebody walked into the office, was hanging in Cedarhurst in the office there, and he says to me, he says, "Why are your eyes covered with a talus?" I never bothered to ask the artist why he did it. I could imagine certain reasons, you know, but I'm not going to go there. I said to him, you know, I think the reason is because if you want to conceive that inner beauty, if you want to recognize, realize the godless that's there, if you want to be able to see it, the first thing you have to do is close your eyes. The second thing you have to do is cover them with the talus so you can't possibly peek at what it looks like, and just squeeze. That's the only way, because otherwise we're so influenced by the outward look. We're so jaded by what we see. We're so so unnerved by what we hear. And to be able to perceive the greatness that is inside of each and every Jewish neshama, that requires a temporary blindness. We have to close the eyes, we have to cover them so we can't possibly peek, and just squeeze it out. And that's the message. And I really think that, you know, we tend not to look at a person as to what he goes through, but rather we look at the surface. Much by the way, you know, if you look at the Mesilas Yesharim in Zehirus, Mesilas Yesharim starts out, he says, when we act, when we do things, we have to have an awareness of judgment. Are we doing good or are we not doing good? What's going on? In other words, we tend to do good, but tend to do without thinking about judging what we do. And that's really the essence of keeping on the right path. Same thing when we look at people, we tend to look at what it looks like. They're acting, this one speaks not nice. This one does things that are not nice. This one does this, this one does that, and that's all we see. But if we stop, or if we learn the art, the skill of looking inside, what's going on? Where's this person coming from? What's bothering him? What's behind these actions? Sometimes that it's a whole different world. You know, the truth is HaKadosh Baruch Hu judges us that way. In Schar, what do Chazal say? Lefum tsaro agro. The schar is according to the pain. If it's more difficult to do the mitzvah, person gets more schar, which means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't just look at the outside. I'm doing the mitzvah and he's doing the mitzvah. And the same thing. Yeah, but when I'm doing the mitzvah, it may have been easier for me. And when he's doing the mitzvah, it may have been harder for him. He gets a whole different schar, lefum tsara agra. And the same thing with mitigating circumstances when we do things inappropriately. There's something wrong. This guy does something wrong. It's bishat nefesh. It was very simple. He could have controlled himself. He doesn't have such a passion. He doesn't have such a taiva. He doesn't have such a history. He doesn't have such an isoyan. So, not so terrible, you know. What he's doing is, no, in fact, since he doesn't have such an isoyan, so what he's doing is much worse. The other guy who's pushed and pressed and obsessed and pre, I don't want to say preconditioned, that's not true, but suffered so much in this area and has such a complex relationship with the situation, so he's doing something and like for him it may be like wow, not together oinis mamish, maybe he is, sometimes we are, but certainly mitigating circumstances, something that certainly in Medine Shomayim he's looked at as saying, you know, okay, look, he had a bigger nisoyan, so it was harder for him. So Mamela has to be judged according, and we have to do that too. And the truth of the matter is that one of the big problems, and this is just my repeating again something that I always repeat, one of the big problems is as the numbers get bigger, it becomes more and more difficult to do this. When you're dealing with 2-3 people, it's much easier to spend the time and the focus to look at them and see what has to be done, what the problem is, what's wrong, what's right. But when you're dealing with a lot of people, I mentioned this once, I had written this once, that one of the problems with kids going off the derech, one of the causes is the size of families. As families are bigger, it becomes much harder. And my kids made me edit that out because it sounds like I'm against having big families. No. But when we have more children, we have to be aware that we need more tsumet lev. We need to pay more attention to each individual one because they're all different. Each one is unique, and each one has his own set of the circumstances. One of the stupidest and biggest mistakes that people make is, oh, these three kids, they grew up in the same home, they should be exactly the same. This was the first child, this was the second child, this one had a younger sibling, this one had an older sibling. There's 1,000 variables, no, maybe 100,000 variables. Maybe that's exaggerated. But there's so many variables that could make the difference between this child and the next one. Twins, identical twins are very different. I'm sorry, I know from personal experience. Identical twins, what? No, can be very, I don't know personal experience, but from sometimes I can know personal experience that they can be very different. Different personalities, different strengths, different weaknesses. That's just the way it is. Everybody has, no two circumstances are the same. Because even though it's the same home, the same parents, they live in the same room, they live in the same food, but, everything. So this is the key, I think, the key to any chinuch system, if we wish to maintain the vision, and if we wish to maintain the patience, and be able to guide people along the process, I think the key to it is to really try to understand each individual for who he was. You know that, and I'll just conclude with this, that I say it many times, but it's one of my favorites. When Moshe Rabbeinu was informed that he's going to pass on from the world, he had a request of 4 items for a successor. The first item he said, "Vayomer Moshe el Hashem, Yifkoid Hashem Elokei Horuchos L'chol Bosor Ish Al Ha'Ego." And Rashi seems to be bothered by the Loshon Hashem Elokei Horuchos L'chol Bosor. Yifkoid Hashem Ish Al Ha'Ego. What are you getting all the God of the Spirit of all flesh? What kind of talk is that? So Rashi says his tefillah was like this, Rabbeinu Shalalem, Goliv Yodua Lefanecha, that every individual is different. Appoint a leader, Sheyuchal Lizbol Kol Echod VeEchod Lefi Dato, who can tolerate and deal with each one according to his unique personality. And then I always say, this is not for a family of 10 kids, and not for a classroom of 25, and not for a school of 500 or 1,000. This is for a Klal Yisrael of millions of nefashos. The first requirement on the short list for leadership is the ability to be soivel, each one according to his uniqueness. It's much easier to push everyone into a mold and pretend everybody is alike and nobody is any different, and the age group is what determines, and the homogeneous something or other that we made in the classroom is what determines. There's no such thing. I once heard from an old Israeli educator. He said, if you have 2 classes, Aleph classes, Shmuel Aleph, 9th grade, both honor classes, everything else, it's 2 preparations. And I disagreed with him. I said, you know how many preparations it is? Depending how many kids you have in the class. And that makes all the difference.